Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for a few minutes. We have with us a fascinating guest today who's written a number of very, very interesting books. Now, first of all, everybody in our listening audience has heard of the German Gestapo. And, of course, you know, the picture in your mind of this man with the overcoat and the black hat and coming and, you know, grabbing people and taking them off to headquarters to be tortured and questioned and sent to prison. The German Gestapo certainly epitomized, you know, all that was ruthless and bad about the German society, or at least that is our perception of that. And yet, of course, most people think that Heinrich Himmler headed the Gestapo. Heinrich Himmler headed German security. The man who headed the German Gestapo was a man named Heinrich Mueller. And, of course, most people have never heard of Heinrich Mueller, and the reason you haven't is because you're not supposed to. Because it would be very embarrassing to your perception of what you honestly think you believe and know to know that Heinrich Mueller came to the United States and was working here with our government for the Central Intelligence Agency and stayed here until he died, and he was never punished for being a member of the Nazi Party or the things the Gestapo did. In fact, we had the show trials over there after the war, and of course that was to make the American people feel that we were really anti-Nazi. But you know, if you study what really happened, you'll find that under Operation Paperclip, our government brought many, many of the Nazi scientists, many of those who carried out the macabre experiments in the concentration camps, they were brought over here working for our government, living comfortable lives, and many others were helped to escape to South America where they lived out their lives. And of course, the Simon Wiesenthal group tracked down one, Adolf Eichmann, but the rest of them, our government allowed to stay there. But of course, we can't let the American people know that, because then they wouldn't believe what they're being told about so many other things. They might begin to question so much of what they've learned in school or hear or read, you know, from the controlled media. Well, with us is Mr. Gregory Douglas, who's written a couple of excellent books. He has four volumes on the Gestapo chief, Heinrich Mueller. Mr. Douglas, how did you get the information? You have a lot of the original documentation and diaries or copies of the information on Heinrich Mueller, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And how did you get hold of that? And, of course, what did you learn from it?
Well, I got some of it from Mueller himself, but a lot of it came from a man named Crowley, who was with the CIA at one time and had worked Mueller when he was in this country.
In other words, Mr. Crowley, who was deputy assistant director of covert operations.
Yeah, he was deputy director of clandestine operations,
right,
so to speak, yeah.
And so he knew Mueller then?
Oh, yes. They worked. Mueller was over here since 1948. He came over in 48 from where he was living in Switzerland.
And, of course, he lived here until he died in, what, 85?
83.
And so, well, of course, then, of course, you got a copy of his diary from his widow. And then, of course, there's just so much information. But why don't the American people know that Mueller was brought over here and he was never punished for, you know, what the Gestapo did?
Well, because he was a resource for the CIA, he was protected, and that's basically what it boils down to.
Well, of course, you know, supposedly, you know, we punished all the wicked Nazis, but really, that's more perception than reality, isn't it?
No, well, we took a few, but most of the businessmen and the people, especially in the intelligence field, we used every one of them. We used Galen, of course. General Galen was an army general. He was in charge of Foreign Armies East Intelligence Section, and he was put forward to the United States as a great and brilliant man who knew Russia. Well, he didn't know Russia. He knew battlefield units. He knew that this tank unit was here and that infantry unit was there, and that's all he ever knew. He knew nothing about what went on in Moscow. But he sold a bill of goods to the Americans, and they hired him at huge money. And the CIA operated him out of the Munich area there for years, until 1955, 56, when the unit became part of the German government. But he was no expert at all. He was an expert on battlefield things, and most of these battlefield units, these Russian army units from the Second War, had been disbanded. But he sold a bill of goods, and actually the Cold War, he was the one whose paper started the Cold War. He was told by the Army, at that time he worked for the Army between 46 and 48, that they wanted a report from Galen indicating that the Russian Army was about to attack. So he concocted this story that there were around 135 Russian armored divisions poised to strike. A copy of it was sent to the President and leaked to Congress, which started a panic. Well, there were two groups of people who benefited by this. The first one, of course, were the businessmen in this country who'd never had it so good as they had during the Second War building military equipment. And then the second group were the military who were being reduced in forces, and they didn't like being kicked out. So, of course, it stopped and reversed itself when we began rebuilding. And the theory was the Russians were momentarily going to attack us, and Galen's documentation was what supplied it. I asked him one time why he did this, and he said, I was paid to do it. I mean, they asked me to do it, and that's it. I was bounden to them because they hired me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the bombing that we did during the Second World War. And I know I was in Cologne as a young army officer in 1954 or so. And, you know, the whole city was flattened, except for the cathedral in the center of the town. But as you pointed out in one of our previous conversations, our workforces were told not to bomb the Ford Motor Company plant, even though it was turning out all sorts of...
No, we didn't do that. It was the safest place to go. The local Gauleiter and all of the big party officials always went to the Ford factory to during bombing raids so they wouldn't get bombed. And the same thing applied down in Ploiești in Romania. That's a huge oil complex down there, and there were certain refineries down there that were forbidden to be attacked by the Americans when they had their B-25 attack on Ploiești. By the way, within a week it was back to full production again. But nevertheless, I mean, burning oil looks good, but they didn't destroy the cracking towers. They didn't destroy anything because they couldn't. The Germans were aware they were coming. They came in much too low, and the anti-aircraft took care of most of them. And the ones that people were dropping bombs into these oil tanks and setting fires, and planes would fly right into them, and that's the end of that. But they were given orders not to bomb certain refineries because they were owned by Americans or American groups or British groups. And even though they were producing gasoline for the German Wehrmacht, they were still not allowed to do anything.
Well, war is war, but business is business. We'll be back here in just a moment with Mr. Douglas. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Do you ever feel sort of run down, that you need more energy? Well, let me tell you about a product. It's called Be Alive Royal Jelly, and I've used this for close to 10 years, and my family has used it. We've been very, very happy with it. And the company came and offered to sponsor us for a month. So we certainly agreed to that. We think it's a great, great product. It's made from the royal jelly that comes from the beehive. This is what the queen bee eats. It's so that the Castro did it. A lot of people think the oil people did it. A lot of people believe that the mafia were behind this. And there may be a little bit of truth in everything, but the real thing is, of course, that this whole thing was put together by our Central Intelligence Agency. Now, of course, if this is really true, how could we verify that? We would have to have somebody from the Central Intelligence Agency who came forward and admitted it. After all, otherwise it's just speculation. And what's really so important about the book Regicide is, this is the smoking gun. And the fact that you haven't heard about it from Barbara Walters or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw, and Mr. Douglas has not been interviewed on any of those major networks, simply is a reflection of how effective they are in controlling what the American people think. Mr. Douglas, how did you get the papers from Robert Crowley, who was the Assistant Director of Covert Operations for the Central Intelligence Agency, that goes into the background of how the CIA created or actually engineered the assassination of President Kennedy, and why did they kill him?
Well, Crowley had been a participant in this, and he was quite old when I got to know him, and he was a very lonely man, and I think he wanted to justify some of the things that had happened on his watch. And he was sick. He was undergo major surgery, lung surgery, for believed to be cancer. And he'd been helping me with the Mueller books with incidental information of some value. And he said to me, you know, if I go in the hospital and anything happens to me, my wife knows nothing about this, and I'm not going to be able to get anything for you. So I would like to hope that maybe you and I can send you some things. And if I'm okay, if I come back, you can return them to me. Otherwise, you know, you can keep them because it won't make any difference. And that's basically what happened. And in there was a folder of papers called Operation Zipper, it was called, and this was the CIA business about Kennedy, why they had to get away with him, how it was done, who was involved in it, all the various minutes of meetings and so forth. And basically, the CIA was infuriated with Kennedy because he was dealing with the Russians. They felt he did have a backstairs contact with the Russian government, and he wasn't using it, and he was bypassing the CIA, he was bypassing the State Department.
Well, why don't you give the background to this? Why did Kennedy want to bypass the Central Intelligence Agency? It was basically because he didn't trust him, wasn't it?
No, he didn't trust him, and this was just after Operation Northwoods, which has now come out in Mr. Bamford's book. Operation Northwoods was a plan concocted by the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Department of Defense that they would attack, the U.S. government would attack U.S. bases in Guantanamo Bay in Miami in men wearing uniforms of Castro's Cuba.
Now, in other words, we would stage an incident to precipitate a war.
But the idea was to shoot at airplanes and so forth and full of people. And the result, of course, was this is what would happen. And so, as far as I can see, the government is... Kennedy found out about this and put a stop to it. And the CIA apparently wasn't very happy with him because up to that point, they had been the arbiters of foreign policy in the United States. They're the ones who told the president which countries they should support, which leaders they should assassinate, which policies should be implemented. The presidents went along with them, so they had a pretty fair sailing. But then when this came along, Kennedy was bypassing it, dealing directly with the Russians, and he was very apt to find out that certain things the CIA said weren't true. So they just decided that they'd get rid of him.
And, of course, Kennedy really wasn't supposed to win the election. Richard Nixon was supposed to win the election. He was an establishment individual. He had been very close to the Rockefeller interests. And, of course, old Joe Kennedy got the mafia to intervene.
Chicago and in Texas, not the mafia. It was Lyndon Johnson in Texas. But they got the mob in Chicago to vote early and often. They voted cemeteries. And that actually put Kennedy over the top, but only by a little.
Right. But, of course, he won the election, and now they've got a man in there that they really can't control. He thinks he's the president. And he really doesn't understand the power structure. If he understands the power structure, he's not going to play games with him. And so he was rather upset about this Operation Northwood. And if you haven't read it, we carry James Bamford's excellent book, Body of Secrets, and we even offer the Operation Northwood. We actually have that, although it's 20 or 30 pages, something like that, and they were even planning to shoot down planes that were perceived to be full of people over Cuba after a Mayday call saying we're being attacked by MiGs, and all these people would supposedly die, and then, of course, we would have an excuse for going to war. Would they do this? Yes, apparently they would, and it was only Kennedy that actually stopped this from happening, and after that, as Mr. Douglas says why, of course, the president didn't trust the CIA. So what about this backdoor method he had of getting in touch with Khrushchev, and what was this all about?
Well, he had heard his brother, actually Bobby Kennedy, the attorney general, decided it might be a good idea to defuse some of these international situations like the Cuban Missile Crisis or the Checkpoint Charlie crisis, which could have erupted into a nuclear war. And the best way to do that was to talk to the Russians. So he talked to a man named Grigory Bolshakov, who was the TASS representative in this country, TASS being a Russian news agency. Bolshakov had the ear of Khrushchev. So if Kennedy had a problem, he'd tell his brother. His brother would talk to Bolshakov. Bolshakov would talk to Khrushchev, and the matter would be straightened out.
Now, wasn't that covered in one of Seymour Hersh's books?
Yes, it's in Hersh's book.
All right. What's the name of the book?
Oh, I don't know.
Is it Dark Secret or something?
Dark Secret.
All right, fine.
That's in there, too.
All right, fine. So this is pretty well verified, although, of course, Crowley has all this in the information he said to Mr. Douglas. So now, of course, the CIA is suspicious that something's going on behind their back, and they find out that Bobby Kennedy is in touch with this man from TASS. And, of course, some of the information that they're giving the president is getting to Khrushchev, and they feel that Kennedy is a traitor. Is that it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Exactly. So they decided to remove him. And then in order to do this, they had to start having networks. They had a network with Hoover, and they actually used this man Sullivan as the front man, and they talked to the director of Central Intelligence Agency, John McCone, and they got a man by the name of Marshall Carter to work with them. They had people working for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. A Colonel Cass was involved in that. That's all listed in these documents, and it's all the actual facsimiles are published in the thing. So.
And these are the papers that come from Mr. Crowley, who was, of course, the deputy director of covert operations. So they plan on murdering the president, but of course they wouldn't do that themselves. They were going to contract this out.
They tried to get the mafia in Chicago to do it, and they wouldn't. It was too dangerous. So then the mafia in Chicago contacted the mob in Sicily, who again refused to do it. But they in turn got a hold of the so-called Union Corps, so the Corsican Union, which is a Franco-Italian group stationed in Marseille, was famous for drug running, smuggling, and so forth. And they agreed to do it for a specific amount of money. So they said they supplied the assassins.
All right. Well, now, was there somebody then on the grassy knoll, or did he go?
Oh, yes. That's where they shot from. They used a .223 military cartridge with mercury-tipped bullets. They fired one shot into Kennedy's head at almost point-blank range, and that's what killed him.
All right. Well, what about Lee Harvey Oswald?
As far as these reports say, he had absolutely nothing whatever to do with it.
But, of course, we had to convince the American people that he...
Yeah, well, there's documents in there. I mean, there's the famous Katzenbach memo saying it's urgent that Oswald be blamed and no one else and so forth, and that was it.
But, of course, if they could convince the American people of a lie, then what other things have they lied to us about?
What haven't they lied about?
And I think the American people have to understand the CIA has people planted in the media across America. And one of the advantages of this book, it's called Regicide, is that Mr. Crowley had put in a list of 4,000 names and addresses of people that he, as the assistant deputy director of covert operations, were felt that he could work with, or they were actually all associated, or many of them were associated with an intelligence journalist. Isn't that it?
Yes.
And, of course, did you have any trouble with the CIA when they knew you were going to put the information
in? Never had any trouble, direct trouble with the CIA ever. They won't even talk to me. If I ask them questions, they don't answer. I ask them for information under FOIA, and they refuse to give it to me. They won't even give you the address of the place they live in. So,
but some of the people whose names were on this list were rather unhappy when you put...
Oh, yes. Well, I had a fellow... write to me and say that he was furious that the name was in there, that he was not with the CIA. He'd only known some of these people. And I said, well, I don't know how your name got there. I certainly don't know who you are. And I said, well, you know something? Frankly, if anybody accused me of being in the CIA, I'd sue them for defamation of character.
And you never heard from him?
No, I never heard from him again.
We're going to have to take another quick break here, but I just want to mention you can get these books from Radio Liberty. You can get the Volume 1 or Volume 4 of the book on the Gestapo Chief. And Heinrich Mueller, Volume 4, is his diary here in the United States. And, of course, the other fascinating information, there are actually 4 volumes, but you can get 1 and 4, which we carry. You can get the book Regicide. Hear from us. It's by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You need to get this information. You need to read it, contemplate it. If this is really true, then, of course, you're being lied to by the general media. This is why I do what I do 5 hours a day, is trying to get people to think and to realize what's really going on. Because if they could kill an American president and get away with it, working with John Edgar Hoover and, of course, the FBI, and then they were able to put together that Warren Commission and convince the American people that one bullet went through President Kennedy and went through Governor Connally and did a loop-to-loop and went through his right wrist and his left thigh and left all sorts of bullet fragments every place it was, and then magically reconstituted itself. And then was found lying in pristine condition on the gurney next to Governor Connally there in the emergency room at Parkland Hospital. If they could convince the American people of that, they could convince them they ought to take smallpox vaccine, because smallpox is coming back any time now. Or they could convince us of anything they want to. After all, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. If you say it often enough, people will believe. Telephone number to call, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, Regicide, and Gestapo Chief.
the Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Gregory Douglas, and of course he's an author, and he's written a number of fascinating books, and he simply accumulates and gets this historical information and puts it out. But of course, so many of these books are never going to be reviewed in the New York Times and the Washington Post, because it contains information the establishment, the rulers, the people of great wealth who control our media and control so many of our corporations, really don't want you to get, because their goal is a new world order and a new world religion. And after all, they need the power, military and financial power of the United States to accomplish that goal. Why do you think we have troops in 140 nations throughout the world today? At least that's the figure that Congressman Ron Paul uses. It may only be a few dozen, maybe a few hundred. And why do we have an FBI office in Moscow and another one in Beijing? What's wrong with this picture? Well, right now let's go to Charlie. Hi, Charlie. Where are you calling from?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Well, good to have you with us. Question or comment?
Yeah, I'd like to question you guys for about 2 hours, but I know I can't get away with that.
No, I'm afraid not.
Fascinating stuff, Dr. Stan. And your guest, what was his name?
Gregory Douglas, in his books, Gestapo Chief, and there's four volumes of that. We carry one and four. We can get to two and three for you. And then Regicide, and that is the story of the murder of the assassination of President Kennedy, written from the point of view of Mr. Crowley, who is Assistant Director of Covert Operations for the CIA.
Well, there was quite a few reasons to kill Mr. Kennedy. I mean, I hate to be so callous about it, but from what I see, it was no big loss.
Well, I think that the loss was that they were able to get away with this. I may disagree with President Kennedy, but if they can kill President Kennedy and get away with it, they could kill a good man who was in there, and I'm sure that they have.
Absolutely.
I've talked to a man who was hired by the CIA as an assassin to kill the author of a book called Compromised. It was a book about George Bush and Bill Clinton. That was L.D. Brown. But go ahead. Do you have a question for Mr. Douglas?
Yes, I have two questions. The first is, I'm reading this book, None Dare Call It Treason, 25 years later, and I was fascinated when the gentleman is, everything he's saying, but he's talking about Eisenhower took particular delight in destroying Joseph McCarthy, and I was wondering if you would comment on that, and I would also...
All right, well, let's get that, and then you can have one more question. Okay. Mr. Douglas, what's your response to where was Joe McCarthy fit in? You know, was he actually accusing all these innocent people, or what was the story there? Because I understand Mr. Crowley was close to him.
There had been a flood of Roosevelt, in order to maintain himself in office and win elections, Roosevelt had to cater to two groups of people, not individuals. And the liberals were very happy with him, and then the arch-liberals, and then the communists, they supported him. And then they voted in Fox, and they were very important. Now, Roosevelt was too stupid to be a communist, but he was clever enough to realize that these people could help him. So he was very, very helpful to them, basically through the off-grid offices of his wife, Eleanor. And he supported the communists. He supported Stalin. He recognized the Soviet Union. He did all kinds of things that Stalin liked, and he supported him unquestionably throughout the war. But he also put in, for instance, in the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, he put into these organizations people that were known communists because they appeased Stalin. And he had many, many people in the United States government at very high levels who were outright communist agents. And one of them, as a matter of fact, agitated the war in the Pacific, a man by the name of Harry Dexter White. So then, of course, when he died, his power went with it. And Harry Truman came, and Harry Truman was simply a Midwesterner, an honest man, who had no use for these people, the intellectual crowd from Harvard and the radical people, and he fired them. And, of course, they weren't happy, and one of the reasons, Harry Truman had the legacy of Roosevelt to contend, but he couldn't very well attack Roosevelt and expect to get Democratic votes, so he was very quiet about it, but they encouraged considerable bloodletting, and they cleaned out large numbers of these people and got them out of the government. They couldn't attack the movie industry too well because they had no power over it, but they went after the writers and they went after a lot of the people over there. So no, McCarthy actually was bringing to the attention of the public something that most people believed. And they say, well, this man was not a card-carrying communist, therefore he's innocent. That's not true. No communist agent ever carried a communist party card. It was considered, many of them were considered conservatives, or they had nothing to do with the party. If you were a spy, you were not encouraged to go to meetings of communist party members. In fact, you were ordered not to.
Well, now, didn't Mr. Crowley actually give Senator McCarthy some of his material?
No, Mr. Crowley didn't, but Mr. Mueller did.
Mr. Mueller did, okay.
He did it. He did. He gave the information to McCarthy through the good offices of Cardinal Spellman in New York, all three of them are Catholics.
Now, this is Heinrich Mueller, who was the head of the...
Yes, he was living in Washington at the time in Georgetown, and he was acquainted he had been a member of the BVP, the Bayerische Volkspartei, before the Nazis came to power, and they were the so-called clerical part, or black party. They were the Catholic Church political arm in Bavaria, which is a very Catholic area. So he had good church connections, and he developed them in this country, too, when he got here. And the result, of course, was that it was decided McCarthy would be the one to go after these people and so forth, and everybody stood away from him. Now, McCarthy was a drunk, and he was also a homosexual, but on the other hand, none of this information was ever brought out because, well, Truman said he despised the man, but he was not going to use any of this material on him, and therefore he could say what he wanted to because this was America. In other words, he let him have his way, but then Truman had plausible deniability in saying, I don't think about that. I had nothing to do with it. I'm sorry, McCarthy's a Republican, and we don't get along. And McCarthy did do, depending on your political point of view, either a great deal of good or a great deal of damage.
But he was identifying people who were communists.
Oh, yes, there's no question about that, but the problem was that... The thing, it went much too deep for that. The thing was that there were many, many people who were in the intelligence community, currently in the intelligence community, that hadn't been fired in 1945 by Truman. And many of these people were very simpatico with the communist movement and had been during the war. James Angleton, for instance, was very, very sympathetic with these people. He'd worked with them. He'd also worked very closely with the mob in Italy. Now, the problem is you can clean house, but where are you going to stop? You're going to clean out your own house. You're going to clean out someone else's. So they allowed dentists and school teachers and labor people to get nailed for this and accused of this. But the big people, and a few Roosevelt people were, but they never could quite prove it. They never could prove Harry Dexter White. They had the evidence, but it just started coming out now.
Well, of course, but then, of course, Harry Dexter White suddenly dies just before he's going to...
Yes, he had a heart attack. You know, as Mueller used to say, there were two bad habits. He liked to give heart attacks to people because it was no mess, but he said the American government threw people out windows.
Right.
They threw Lawrence Duggan out a window. Mr. Forrestal made a sudden descent. There were several other people who suddenly leaped out of windows, and Mueller said that shows no consideration for people who are passing down below.
Oh, well,
and falling 16 floors is not going to improve your complexion if he lands on your head.
Well, Charlie, we have the Verona Files, which goes into the background of Harry Dexter White and Algie Hiss. Even Harry Hopkins, Roosevelt's personal confidant who lived right in the White House with Roosevelt, was a communist asset. So do you have one more question?
Yeah, this isn't the question. Do I put Radio Liberty, I want to buy your book, Brotherhood of Darkness.
Okay.
Now, do I put Radio Liberty or do I put your name?
Radio Liberty. Nothing comes to me.
Okay.
Okay, God bless you.
Can I ask just one question, please?
One more question, okay.
I'm reading this book about, this is 1959, where this guy came over on a Fulbright scholarship. He was the youngest major general ever in the KGB. And 32 years.
Anatoly Golitsyn?
No, this guy's name's Oleg Kalugin.
Okay.
And he did a book, he's written this book called The First Directorate. But anyway, Kennedy, it was common knowledge, according to Mr. Stormer and this, that Castro was a communist long before, and they all knew this. In this Bay of Pigs, Kennedy screwed the whole thing up deliberately. And he also signed this thing to disarm us and with that 7277 and that public law 297. And it goes on and on with
okay,
this guy.
You're absolutely right. Maybe we could discuss that some other time. I have a lot of personal knowledge about the Bay of Pigs and other things that that was designed to fail specifically.
Okay, sir.
Okay, thanks so much. And let's go to, is this Fred who's calling? Is this Fred? Or?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I have a couple little things here. I listened to a very long interview with a man named Chuck Barris, who used to have the Chuck Barris Productions on television. He runs the Gong Show. And
okay, well, what do you have a question for Mr. Douglas?
Well, we had in 1972 or 1973, there was supposed to have been a finding said that we weren't supposed to be assassinating people anymore. But Chuck Barris is just coming out with a book that said after all the time he was on television, and after that, after he left television, he become an assassin for the CIA.
Well, I wouldn't be at all surprised. As I say, I know a man who was hired in the early 90s to kill somebody by the CIA. His name was L.D. Brown. But, of course, Mr. Brown will not talk about that today, but he did tell me about that when I talked to him. What about that, Mr. Douglas? Does the CIA still hire people to kill?
Oh, no, the CIA is basically dead. It hasn't done anything for a long time, and what it has done has been a dismal failure. They haven't been able to predict anything. They spent most of their time attacking the FBI and trying to claim that they're really wonderful people, but their reason for existence died when communism collapsed, and they haven't had any justification for the immense amount of money they get from the government, which, by the way, they got more of last year than ever. And as far as them killing people is concerned, I think anybody who lives in Washington and who's above the level of a janitor will tell you that the CIA is well known to remove people. They haven't done it for quite a long time, but they killed Patrice Lumumba, Dag Hammarskjöld, Rafael Trujillo.
DM and New, of course.
They killed them, those two, and his brother.
And the President of the United States.
And the President of the United States, and they didn't really care who they killed. If you got in their way, they killed you, and that was it. Or if your government was not satisfactory. For instance, if the CIA people and the leadership were almost all business-oriented, East Coast establishment, and if George's friend, who runs Alcoa Aluminum, discovered that the government of Patagonia was about to seize the aluminum factory, why the CIA would be notified, and they'd tell the president, Patagonia is being overrun with communists. There's Russian battleships in the harbor. Even as we speak, Mr. President, we must destabilize it. Henry Kissinger was a sweetheart that used to do those things.
Okay, fine. Fred, maybe you can get a copy of that book.
Chuck Barris said that he's just coming out with that book now. And
why don't you call me off the air and give me the name and publisher, and I'll get him on, okay?
Okay.
God bless. Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye. And Fred, you know how to reach us, and because I'd very much like to interview this gentleman. Well, Mr. Douglas, of course, when you tell people about these things, an awful lot of them say this just couldn't be true because I don't want to believe it.
Well, most people don't care. As long as the cell phone works, as long as the beer is flowing at the tavern, as long as they get to watch the movies they like, as long as their car doesn't break down, as long as they get their money coming in, they don't care what happens. I mean, and most people in this country have the faintest idea of what's going on outside of their hometown, and even not much in that. They read the newspapers once in a while. They see what's on the headlines, and they watch CNN or the rest of the cookie cutter news, and you know it says this and that, and that Saddam Hussein is drowning kittens. We now have to go and kill him, or that this program in Indonesia, this new American money program from the World Bank, is a wonderful thing. And,
now,
and
we're going to have to interrupt you right there. We're going to have to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Gregory Douglas. But this is the time when I have to remind listeners that Radio Liberty really is listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you who believe there's a problem who would like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month, you've got our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you're helping to finance all the programs we're doing. And of course, our Saturday programs are on about 34, 35 stations, and certainly our daily stations, all of our outlets, we have almost 50 every week where at least people are hearing some of the truth, and hopefully they will actually begin to listen. They'll challenge, they'll say, this can't be true. And then after a while, they'll listen a little bit more, and they say, you know, it might possibly be true. And then, of course, eventually they'll come and they'll say, well, we hope it isn't true. And then finally they'll come to realize it is true, and that the utopian world we live in really is not going to be around much longer. And of course, people must be involved, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if you won't stand against evil today, who will stand against evil when it takes over this country? The people, the Brotherhood of Darkness that controls our government, really does have an agenda. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, or if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, October newsletter, I suggest, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We have November newsletters out. We will send you that one. We'll only send you one. We hope you're going to subscribe at least to the newsletter, because that's how we're able, of course, to finance sending it to key people all across the country. Again, our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Mr. Gregory Douglas, and of course his books that we carry, is one is Regicide, and the other is, of course, Gestapo Chief, and there are four volumes of that. We carry the first volume and the fourth volume, and anybody who wants to get the intermediate ones, we've been able to track down how we can get those as well. But we think it's vitally important that you understand that the CIA brought the head of the German Gestapo to the United States and allowed him to live out his years here, of course, supposedly fighting communism. But the trouble was that we were financing communism indirectly. Many of our major corporations and our banks and our other organizations were creating the best enemy money could buy. So you can justify all these terrible things in the name of fighting communism, but are you really fighting communism? Are we fighting communism today? Oh, no, the communists now are good people. But remember, they were bad, and then they were good, and then they were bad, and now they're good again. It's almost like George Orwell's 1984. And, of course, so much of what we have is simply perception having nothing at all to do with truth. Well, Mr. Douglas's books are both available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we have Chris calling in. Hi, Chris. Where are you calling from?
State of Kentucky.
Okay, well, it's good to have you with us. Are you listening on shortwave or the internet?
Shortwave.
Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to ask the question. I know about the Kennedy assassination with the CIA, but later that we had the assassination of Martin Luther King. What has it come upon that? Is the government involved with that assassination? I've been hearing little pieces about that.
Well, let's get Mr. Douglas's view on that.
The assassination of who?
Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King.
No, the information that people have given to me repeatedly over a period of time is that J. Edgar Hoover orders that. It had nothing to do with the CIA. He was bitterly opposed to Dr. King. He hated him, spied on him, made tapes of him having lewd conversations with women. Now, interestingly enough, and this is all I can tell you, there's a writer named William Bradford Huey. He used to be an editor of the Saturday Evening Post, very reputable. He did a story on James Earl Ray. Now, James Earl Ray was a very stupid person. He's the kind of guy that would smash the window of an electronics store and steal a toaster, or break into a coin-operated laundromat and jimmy open the boxes and steal the quarters. And now, he is believed to have gotten escaped from federal jail, where he was in for bank robbery, which he got caught at, went to California, bought a new Cadillac, had surgery, and then drove back to Memphis, Tennessee. Now, in Memphis, Tennessee was when they had a garbage man strike, and this was supported by Dr. King and his entourage. And they initially stayed downtown at a hotel, took the whole floor, And it was pointed out to Dr. King that this looked very ostentatious for a poor black preacher from, you know, down in Atlanta. So maybe it would be a very good idea if they went to a motel or a cheaper motel that was owned by an African-American. So they went to the Lorraine Motel. They moved to the Lorraine Motel. Now, before they'd moved, before it was even announced they were going to move, Mr. Ray took up residence in a boarding house which overlooked one side of the motel, and Dr. King, of course, had rooms, was given rooms on that side of the motel.
Do we know who suggested that he move to this motel?
One of his staff members, the same type of people who told Bobby Kennedy he'd been a good idea to go back to the kitchen, Bobby. So in any case, now this is what this man, this poor Earl Ray, who just was a small-time thief, and his record's been published, so it's not as if it's a mystery. After his allegedly assassinating Dr. King, he fled to Canada, where he obtained a false passport in the name of a Canadian Montreal policeman, and then went to Europe. Now, getting passports and getting phony documents is a profession that he had knew nothing about. When he ran out of money, he got caught. He was wandering around; no one knew what to do with him. He said someone put him up to it, but he didn't know who it was.
Well, did he? Does Huey think that James Earl Ray actually did the shooting?
No.
All right, he was a patsy then.
Yeah, of course he was.
All right.
Now that's William Bradford Huey, who is not a revisionist and who was not an anti-government person. He was an editor of the Saturday Evening Post, and his book is probably not in print, but you can get it in the library.
What's the title, do you recall?
I don't know. I read it a couple of years ago, and it struck me instantaneously when they presented Ray's criminal record. The man of that background is absolutely incapable of doing all this passport fraud business. But the important thing was that he went to a boarding house overlooking a motel where King wasn't living and wasn't intending to be living.
Right. But somebody set him up, exactly as they had to make a detour of the Kennedy entourage there in Dallas that day, in November.
Well, no, actually, that was legitimate, that you couldn't keep going straight because they had to cut over on the Stemmons Freeway and there was a traffic island, and you couldn't have gone down the straight ahead and then turned because you'd had to go up over a piece of land. So they had to go right, then they had to go left, and that's why they were doing it. I mean, I studied that, and I could see why that happened, because they had to. The U.S. government reports point out that was a mandatory move if he was going to the Trade Center for a luncheon. He couldn't just keep going straight. And everybody says, why couldn't he have kept going straight? Well, because it was three converging roads, and on the right hand side the converging road continued past the exit, so they went right and then they turned left to get onto that exit. That's why they did it, and I don't have any problem with that.
Well, of course, they brought him right in front of the Texas Book Dispatch.
Oh yes,
where the R.B. Oswald just.
Well, they had published the itinerary of his trip weeks before. In other words, the exact route he was taking had been published. It was in the Dallas Post. Everyone knew where he was going. If anybody wanted to know, they would know exactly where he was going to be.
But somebody had gotten, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald a job there just a few weeks beforehand.
Yes. A woman named Ruth Payne was a friend of Mrs. Marina Oswald. By the way, people say, you know, Oswald had no intelligence connections. Marina Oswald was Marina Prusikova. And her uncle was the head of the MVD in the town in Russia where Oswald ended up. And you know, Mr. Posner said, "Oh, he was only like a deputy sheriff." No, he wasn't, Gerald. He was a very high level Ministry of the Interior policeman.
Now, for our listeners, Mr. Posner wrote a book called "Case Closed."
And oh, yes.
He said the Harvey Oswald did it. Of course, this was praised by the New York Times and the Washington Post and by the major media, and it was simply, we got to get the American people to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, and we can never let them know about the CIA.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is that I don't think any sane human being believes in the magic bullet theory, regardless of what other theories you may believe in. The bullets do not come up from the back, go into a man's neck, rise up after it goes through his neck, turn to the right, turn around, go diametrically down through through Connolly's right shoulder blade, ribs, smash his wrist and land up in his thigh, and as you say, came out perfectly. But Mr. Posner says it's true because he says so.
Right. Well, of course, I talked to the doctor, Dr. Crenshaw. In fact, that's in a four-tape set we have. Dr. Crenshaw was in the Parkland Hospital, actually saw the bullet fragments being taken out of Governor Connolly's right wrist and left thigh, and yet that bullet, amazingly enough, got all those bullet fragments back and was there in pristine
condition. Well, I'll tell you something. Let me say this to you. You can discounting all theories and opposition. If you watch the Oliver Stone movie, never mind the whole plot, just watch the replay of the tape, the so-called Zapruder tape. This was taken at the scene, and it's shown twice in the movie. And you can see without any question that the bullet strikes Kennedy on the right side of his head. His head snaps back to the left. He's thrown backwards to his left. And the motorcycle on the left side of his car is splattered with blood and brains, and part of his skull flies off to the left. Now, anybody that's been in the military or ever hunted will know that if you shoot a deer, or your mother-in-law, or a burglar, or anything else, they don't fall away from the bullet, towards the bullet, they fall away from it. And that anything blown out of them, like their spleen or something, goes behind them. It doesn't come forward. So the argument that Oswald shot him with that Italian pop gun from behind and hit him in the head and blew all the stuff the opposite way, that's just ridiculous. There are laws of physics that are not lifted even for presidents. So just that in itself is enough to raise a huge question mark in the mind of anyone that's had any experience whatever in the field, as I say, of military, police, or hunting.
All right. Well, we've still got Chris on the line. Chris, we've only got about a minute. Do you have anything else to ask?
Well, I just want to thank for that information very well. But I also heard about the Kennedy assassination. It did come from inside the limousine, too.
Well, I'm a little skeptical of that. I think that...
Yeah, somebody in the trunk was shooting and right behind, and one of Johnson's guards accidentally dropped his rifle. And I've heard there was on the building, somebody was firing from the top of the Dallas courthouse. And the idea was that he was shot. I don't know if there were 40 people on the roof of that building. I really can't tell you. I don't know how many times Kennedy was hit. One guy says 18 times. One says 9. And your book can't be right because you don't say 9. But the point is, I'm going by the official Department of the DIA report.
Right.
And it states that the fatal shot was fired from the right front, slightly above, and the bullet was a .223 high-velocity, small-caliber bullet with mercury center, and that's why the brain disappeared, because when it explodes, when the mercury is in a little tube that's been drilled out of the bullet, and it's projected out the end, and the mercury, of course, is pushed to the back of the bullet. When it enters any kind of a target, be it a person or a pumpkin, the mercury flies forward, and it explodes the bullet. And that's why, it literally blew his head off, and a good part of his head flew off. You can see it in the tapes, and it was all over the back of the car and everything else.
Chris, you have to realize they put out all this disinformation to get you so confused you can't think effectively.
Right.
And, of course, this is a story. It was really the driver of the car who did it, and I think that this is...
Well, I heard Mrs. Kennedy that she was mad because he was cheating on her, so she had a .44 Magnum hidden in her handbag and shot him in the head. I mean, I've heard that from people very seriously telling me that.
And Chris, you have to understand what they want to do is get you confused. Get this book and read it. It's fascinating. God bless you. Thanks so much. And Mr. Douglas, I want to thank you so very much for being with us again. It's always a pleasure, and I think that a lot of people are going to hopefully begin to seriously question, and they'll want to get your information, because it's the only really smoking gun we've got, the only person on the other side who ever said what really happened.
My pleasure, as always.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Mr. Gregory Douglas, and of course we hope that many of you out there will want to seriously challenge what you've been told by the controlled media. Now, the story of the magic bullet alone should make you realize that we've been lied to, but if they could lie about that, what else are they lying about? There must be almost total control over the media. There must also be certainly a collusion between the CIA and the FBI, and if they could do it in 1963, what are they doing today, and why is it that the president doesn't want an independent investigation of what happened last year? And of course, what happened last year is being used to justify, first of all, the war in Afghanistan, then the war in Iraq, and why we're going to war with Iraq. Because he has weapons of mass destruction, because he's a nasty guy. We've been funding him. Anybody remember when we left him in power in 91, when we backed him in the 80s? And now we're going to go to war over there. There are many reasons why we're going to war, and none of them is because Saddam Hussein is a nasty guy. It doesn't even have to do with oil. It has to do with the New World Order and the New World Religion, which is coming. Well, until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan asking you to pray for America and for revival and for our ministry, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.